Now, you listen to me. The most important thing that you must remember, that is, always appear half drunk. You almost think you look helpless. You understand that?
Yes, teacher.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dragons Forever podcast. Yes, we're back after 2 years. I know it's awful. I do apologize. But we're here again for another episode, and it's episode 8. In this episode, we're going to be looking at where black culture and kung fu cinema meet. And I've got two fantastic guests with me who are going to be talking about everything from blaxploitation to hip-hop sampling. Now, before we get into the podcast, I just want to make sure that you guys all know the most up-to-date contact details for the podcast. You can find us on Twitter and now Instagram on the following handle, @DragonsForeverPod. That's Dragons, the number 4, ever pod. Okay, so without further ado, let's get into this episode of the Dragons Forever podcast, where black culture meets kung fu cinema. Okay, lads, welcome to the podcast. It's an absolute honor and privilege and pleasure to have you all here. So I'll do a quick introduction. You've heard the introduction music to the podcast. So the guy who made that music is with us today. It's Leon Smith, aka Smith the Mister. Say hello, sir.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, it's a pleasure to have you here, Leon. We are joined by another good friend of ours and Dragons Forever podcast alumni, I guess we could say now, Mick, because you have been on a previous episode, number 2, when we talked about Ip Man 3 back then. So welcome once again, Mike Forte, Mikel Ledford.
Yes, man. Thanks for having me back again, man. It's been quite a long time, actually, I think. Was it 2015, 2016?
Yeah, 16, yeah. We'd gone, Ip Man 3 had come out, and I remember it was like Christmas Eve, something crazy like that. Like, that's how dedicated we are. It was Christmas Eve, and we should be at home with our family, and we're wandering around the streets of Birmingham, going to the cinema to watch Ip Man 3.
Me, you, and Will?
And me, you, and Will, yeah. That's right, yeah. So we went to go watch Ip Man 3.
Oh, no, I didn't know you did that.
Yeah, we did it, man. Smith, you should definitely go back and listen to episode 2 because I know that there's a cameo by a person in that film who I already know that you're a massive fan of because you've already mentioned to me one of your favorite films. He's in there, so right, you need to you should watch him now as an elder. But he's still got moves. Mikel knows who I'm talking about. He's in the film. It's good. So yeah, definitely listen back to that. But this is how crazy time is. How crazy time flies, man. Because anyone who listens to the podcast, you guys will know that it takes me forever to get a podcast episode out. I mean, Ip Man 4 has happened for heaven's sake since then. You know. So here we are. We're into the final part of the season 1 of the Dragons Forever podcast. So once again, before we kick into this, I want to say a massive thank you for you guys taking your time out to join me. It is hard, especially in the year 2020, which has been the maddest year ever. Just trying to get everyone together is crazy. So this is what we call a COVID secure, socially distanced podcast.
You must be patient. Have some tea, clear your throat. We'll talk later.
We are going to be talking about kung fu films and I guess how they resonate with members of communities outside of the target audience, so outside of the mainland Chinese, Hong Kong Chinese sort of audience. Why is it that people outside of those main target markets are so in love with kung fu films? Like, why are we here, us three here today, why are we talking about kung fu films? Why do we love them so much? I want to start with yourself, Smith. Tell me, man, before we get into anything else, what was the hook? What got you into kung fu films? Yeah.
Well, this is going to sound probably not strange, but like my nan used to bring kung fu films home after work to my dad and my uncles. And then like as I got older, they always used to tell, like when we used to meet up for like family dinners and stuff, they used to say, like, always go crazy about fight scenes and just reenacting them in the front room and stuff like that. And just got me intrigued, and the way that they were so passionate about like these different like fight scenes and different films. Even my nan used to get like go in as well. She used to be like, "Oh, do you remember this?" And that's like just made me think like I need to get involved. So like my dad taught me a few titles, and I was like, okay. And it was from there, really. It was just heavily kind of recommended from my family. So, and it just, once I watched a few, it was just like, oh yeah, man, just, this is proper. This is perfect. Do you know what I mean? So.
That's interesting because my introduction to the whole Kung Fu films happened whilst I was at my grandparents as well. Punjabi films everywhere. And then I found this one dubbed Kung Fu film and I was hooked. So your family heritage is...
Family's from Jamaica.
Okay,
so like Jamaican heritage.
Yeah, my family heritage is Jamaican also.
Okay. And then I remember actually when I was going through a process of trying to watch loads of films, I did actually come to you and say, what kind of film should I watch from Jamaica? I think it was like Orange, yeah. I think he gave me, was on the list. Rockers.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
And a few other films on that list. Were you watching a lot of movies generally?
I think it was a mixture of films, really. Like, obviously, I didn't live at my grandparents' house, but like when I was there on the weekend, it was a mixture of films. So my nan used to kind of bring films home for like my uncles and my dad and stuff like that. And it was a mixture of films. But I think because Kung Fu films were more accessible and cheap rather than the big titles, I think she brought a lot of those home with her. So.
It's been all of 18 years, Mr. Tiger.
In prep for the podcast, I kind of just kind of had to touch base with my uncle to kind of get some of that energy back. And he was telling me, because obviously I wasn't around when they was getting into it at first. And they were kind of telling me kind of the similar situation to like other people in America. Like they would go to the cinema and watch four films back to back. Like late night showing, and he was like so passionate today. He was like saying, yeah, I used to go on Friday, then again on Saturday, then again on Sunday, and then after the like 4 o'clock in the morning, everyone had a style, and it was okay. I'm drunk, you know what I mean? Like everyone was just brocking up everyone, like fighting.
My superior kung fu will finish you off.
Mikhail, how about yourself, man? I brought you into this whole kung fu game in the first place.
I mean, it's actually weird because I thought about this quite a few times and I really tried to pinpoint that exact moment, and there never really is a moment, but there is usually a time that you remember most while watching Kung Fu's, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's when I kind of started or got into it. But I always remember watching on Betamax. So this was, it was literally before VHS. I had a video recorder, which no one wanted. Because VHS became popular, the largest set tapes. And I was given a box full of Betamax tapes. Some of them had music on, some of them had, random bits and pieces. But this one Betamax tape I saw scribbled on in handwriting, Thunder in Mantis. That film was absolutely insane. It had Beardy. And I remember the first time seeing it, and he had that wild hair, remember? Like crazy wild man. And... I remember that film, and that is the film that always feels like that was the starting point of me watching Kung Fu's. But then the same like you guys, I had an uncle who was a little bit different. He was kind of not following the trend of what all the other young guys at the time were doing. He wasn't on the roads or he wasn't involved in anything, just being out there and just, partying. He literally was the nerd who would stay in the house. I then discovered that he had tons of Kung Fu films in his collection. I used to go around to his house every week. I had younger cousins at the time, but they were too young to understand. And I think he just wanted somebody who would appreciate the art form, And that was definitely like my earliest memories of like getting into Kung Fu films. And from there, I was literally hooked. And I tried to find more people who was into Kung Fu's martial arts and anything that was like subculture, and it was just really difficult to find anyone who could connect with, like, that kind of energy you got from watching martial arts on screen.
They transcend, man.
It's just something about that energy, that Thundering Mantis energy, man, just gets to us all. as a younger chap, you know, regardless of color, I think for me it was like, oh, actually, no, this is how I'm going to handle bullies at school. This is what it's about. It's about having confidence in carrying yourself, like, you know, like Bruce Lee, just having that confidence. What resonated for you guys watching it growing up?
Oh, wow. Mm. There's so many things. It's more like lessons to take away. I mean, the one thing you mentioned is definitely, I don't know about you guys, but I'm guessing it's going to be a common theme, but it's just the whole feeling of being oppressed. And even though when I was watching these things, I didn't understand the concept of oppression. But you knew, or you were aware of it. You just didn't know how to articulate that or explain it. But you could tell that there was something you had in common with, say, you know, when you watch, say, something like Drunken Master, right? Mm. You've got this kid who's just on the streets, and it feels like no one cares about him. And then he comes across this teacher, and his teacher has all the knowledge and all the common sense to show him. And you see that character become something from absolutely nothing. You actually get to see the progress. You see him training hard, and he's from, you know, he's from a very humble background. He didn't have much, but just worked hard and became skillful and trained, and just to kind of overcome the big power, if you like, within the film. Never mind the fact that it was a non-white lead. It's just the simple fact that you've got somebody who was the underdog, who's now become the most powerful just through training and discipline. I think that's the part that really resonated with me, especially coming from a background where, you know, I was from a single parent home. Didn't really see my father much around. And at the same time, you've got everything that's going on in inner city Birmingham. So you kind of realize to yourself, well, actually, I'm not that far off from this kid or this guy in the film. And it just gives you a next level sense of power. Like, actually, yeah, I can train, I can be exactly what I want to be as long as I work hard and stay with that discipline. And I think that's what I really got from watching Kung Fu films time and time again. I used to wait for that moment where you see that young apprentice like training, and you can actually see him in the film getting stronger and learning the skills. And that to me was really powerful. So yeah.
Well, let me tell you, my drunk gods don't mess around. Nobody can fight like they do. Yeah!
You know, when I recommended some of the Jamaican films to you before,
yeah,
like if you look at those, they're not similar kind of storylines, but they look and feel similar. They have a similar kind of vibe, like even though like they're different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like okay, I've got to overcome something. I've got to make it. I've got to get through. It's just about the struggle and overcoming that struggle. Yeah. Struggle. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think especially all the classic kung fu films are all about that, don't they? They're all about some sort of struggle. Anyone can relate to, and I think you can take something from that. Like Bruce Lee was perfect for it. Bruce Lee knew exactly. Yeah. He knew his audience. He knew what he was doing. He knew that it was the feelings like post war, the whole feelings of Chinese and the Chinese community feeling, you know, like they didn't have any power and downtrodden by, you know, by foreign invaders and foreign forces. Hence why you always see the Japanese as the baddies, the Brits as the baddies. Even though at a young age, not really fully understanding, as you grow up, you can see that these films were made to make their communities feel empowered.
This time you're eating paper. The next time it's gonna be glass.
Those universal themes of empowerment or feeling like the underdog and overcoming, I think that's something that we all want to be able to feel empowered walking down the street, you know. And I think with Kung Fu films, we almost sort of like live through like these characters, you know. You kind of think like, yeah, if this person can do it, then so can I. You know, like Mike was saying, you know, that sense of, you know, teaching yourself the Drunken Master style and putting your training and hours into it. That's like me thinking about, if I study really hard at school, I'm going to do well in my exams. You know, and I think, you know, so, and it's a lot of people say to me, why do you watch these Kung Fu films? You don't speak Cantonese. You don't speak Mandarin. Yeah. You're not from the culture. You don't understand, like, why are you into those kind of things? And, you know, these are kind of things I want to pull up from you guys. And what other things did you pull out from these Kung Fu films that make you so, like, connected to them?
Me being a musician as well as Mike, like, it's the use of sound in Kung Fu films for me. Obviously, not I didn't really like. This has kind of been something that's kind of developed over as I'm getting older. But like the use of sound, I think, even though it's not great quality sound, but I think the use of sound is excellently done, and especially like the way that the use of the English dubbing, like, and it's very kind of British dubbing as well.
Yeah.
It's like that, like that's part of the Kung Fu film experience for me. Like there's a, like, I think Hong Kong Legends did a reissue of Drunken Master and they redubbed it. Pissed me off. Yeah. Pissed me off.
I think there was
the VHS dub is,
yeah,
the best
is the one
dub.
Yeah,
this is serious stuff.
But that style's only for women.
That is who is a woman. Watch me do the same.
Right.
That dub is what brought you in. You know, yeah. That's what made it accessible. Like that.
But do you know what? So cool about the way the use of dubbing in like Kung Fu movies is the comedy and like it's how it kind of like makes the movie even better. I think the dub actually makes Kung Fu movies for me better. Do you know what I mean? Like I've watched some movies like without dub, and it doesn't make me feel the same way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like the fight scenes are all still sick, but the English dub just adds a little bit of spice on top. I don't know what it is.
Are you Brigadier Charles Shen Wu Ford? Quite right. Now I think it's time you die.
Do you remember what film you took the snippet from for the introduction music?
Now you listen to me.
Oh, I can't remember what it was. It's actually two movies. It's probably the same movie, but different parts. Like the music.
Oh, okay.
The music's not underneath. That's me actually playing the sample and then me playing the vocal on top. So it's not the same thing.
Do you understand that?
Yes, teacher.
So I can't remember where I sampled it from, but I'm going to have to dig that out.
Dig it out. Oh, that's a challenge. A challenge for any listeners. If you know where that sampled from, you need to get in touch with us. I'd love to know. But yeah, the music one is really cool. I guess similar thing for yourself, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'd say more or less the same. It's weird because like nowadays I actually love watching films in its native language, martial arts films in its native language, and I'll read the subtitles. I had to do that for so many films because as I started to get more and more hooked into martial arts films, I realized that the best films you had to get imported.
Yeah.
And I started spending like loads of money on getting imports. And because I was so like attached to my early days of watching martial arts, I just assumed everything was dubbed. But it obviously takes time for the dubbed version to come out after the original. So, yeah, because I started investing in like and paying for films and getting them imported, I actually started enjoying watching films with subtitles. And that was like, that became just as normal as watching films that were dubbed. But dubbed movies are just, they're just classic. They did not, the Hong Kong cinema industry did not know what was going on. They did not, they had no idea that people were going to be completely amused by the dubbing, because the dubbing's classic.
You're on our home ground now. I couldn't give a shit who this area belongs to. Where I am always belongs to me.
Well then, maybe I'd like to find out if that's the truth. Hitley.
Classic dubbing. Yeah,
there's videos on YouTube of like the team of like English dubbers. And you got to try it. If you haven't watched it, go check it out on YouTube. Do a little Google search. Bruv, it is just hilarious.
the original, like...
Yeah, the original. Yeah, yes, the original one. Like, the guys who would have done the sample for the start of that track, they would have done, like, so many. Like,
they would have just churned them out.
They were just literally churning them out. Yeah. They would be in there, like dubbing
it. Did they realise what they were doing? Like, because it was...
Oh like, yeah, they get given the material, so that you see, like, they've got the material there. But because Hong Kong films at the time were shot without sound, sound didn't come in for years later. So
that makes sense.
So what they would do is they'd like and because like Hong Kong films are shot like ad lib, so you'd turn up on the day and it'd be like, it's whatever the director's feeling is for that day. Oh, actually, there's no real script as such. It's just like a loose narrative. It's like, we're gonna get from here to here, but whatever happens, it happens. It doesn't matter what you're saying because I just need the action. So these dubbers have pretty much free reign. So that's why like they can go from like the most obscure, random like thing that they'll be talking about. It's got nothing to do with the scene. To then sometimes they'd be on point though, you know, because sometimes you watch it back and you watch it back with like the subtitle version, and then you watch that the dub version, because obviously with DVDs and Blu-rays, obviously you can just jump between the different audio. And you think, actually, you know, sometimes they were actually quite good. So clearly, they've got the edited film. So they're just making up, but they're probably making up some of the story themselves, thinking, well, he's gone through here and he's now picked a fight with this guy. So let's just, you know, you must be tired of living. You know?
So you want to see how good you are? Then you must be tired of living.
So many lessons, though, man, from just Hong Kong cinema. I mean, I really like the fact as well that it was such a, like, if you think about record labels and the martial arts labels that were like the biggest, like the Shaw Brothers, Hong Kong cinema legends, all of those, you have to respect the hustle, man. Like, it was about being independent, which is very similar to like record labels. Each film house had their own style as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many layers to it. Like, you could tell a Shaw Brothers film to...
like a seasonal films.
That's right. It was just, it just had a different vibe to it. And I just like the way that it was just very independent, like do it yourself. And that is the part that I think as I got older, I resonated with being interested in hip hop culture as well. Like it just seemed to really fit. Mm. You know what I mean? And all about the discipline and, you know.
Yeah, there's loads of parallels, man. Loads.
Yeah, tons.
A game of chess is like a sword fight. You must think first. Before you move.
I guess, you know, especially, I guess, in America, the American popular culture, hip-hop and rap and stuff, they seem to be so intertwined. There's so many parallels between the two things, which, I guess, on the offset, you wouldn't have thought that they'd be so interlinked. For example, Game of Death, Bruce Lee, biggest star. You know, and he's got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the film. You know, to have the foresight to think, actually, let's merge these two together and let's bring the culture together. Then you've got, obviously, like, the music. You've got, you know, Blaxploitation, you know, you know, and then, you know, RZA doing his thing with the hip-hop beats. And
My uncle, like, said something, like, I'm not sure if I mentioned it. I spoke to my uncle today to kind of get the old vibes back, because from when we used to meet up for dinner and stuff. And, like, he said something today which kind of stuck in my head. It's, like, because he was in a sound, like, a Jamaican sound system. So, like watching Kung Fu films were, like, two sound systems clashing, like...
Yeah.
This guy's got the... Yeah, I mean, this style, and my man's got this style, and mine's is better than yours, and I'm going to show you, I'm going to just drop my dub plate, or I'm going to... Use you know what I mean, like Eagle Claw or Snake Fist or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So that really stuck out to me, and I think it's the same with hip hop culture, like with like the battle culture in hip hop or like anything in like within the hip hop culture there is an element of I'm the best. I've got to show you I'm the best, and it's the same with Kung Fu as well.
My Tiger Kung Fu. It's better than yours.
Even with breakdancing, like
breakdancing,
you see so many parallels. Like everyone comes with their style. They have to train. Like one man's got a style that's a lot more technical or power-based moves. Another guy, he's got a style that's more about flow. And it's just at the end of the day, they're both two forms of choreography.
Just
beautifully shot, just elegant, man. Power and expressive at the same time, like. I just used to love the way it was all about clashing the next man's style, like. You thought about counteracting, like if someone comes with, I don't know, like Snake Fist and you're getting outdone, you're going to switch to Eagle's Claw because the eagle catches the snake. And it's the same if someone comes with you're in a beat battle and someone comes with an absolute power banger.
You just got to switch
up the style.
Switch it up, man, just to kind of... So I guess it's just like... I think that's another reason why Kung Fu films resonated with like the ethnic culture, because like we're not battling each other, but we're all trying to like get out of the situation we're in. Do you know what I mean? We're all trying to like win. Do you know what I mean? We want to win, and I think there's a lot of kind of showing that you can win in Kung Fu films, if that makes sense.
Mikhail, for yourself, you know, a lot of people know you by your sort of musical production name of Mike Forte, and you've got a long history of, you know, going into the beat battles. Pretty much coming into each one of those battles, I'd assume, like a kung fu fighter's coming into a tournament. Yep,
exactly. 100%. I agree with that.
I would 100% agree. You couldn't have really said it any better. I mean, even the facts of like Kung Fu's just taught me so many lessons about, you know, true masters is not about displaying their power, but sometimes holding back and having patience. And when it's the right time, sometimes it's not about who's got the loudest and the biggest and the sometimes it's who uses it at the right time.
Yeah.
And all of these parallels are just intertwined between Kung Fu and just life. You know what I mean?
For sure.
That is Kung Fu. That is martial arts. It's a way of life. And it's the same thing with hip hop. It was always a way of life. And I always speak about this in terms of like going slightly off track a little bit, but I always find the parallels between Kung Fu music and blaxploitation movies, and they're all born from the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I remember you saying something in a discussion right at the beginning of this call, and we're talking about, you know, are they typical stereotypes of the black male narrative and female narratives that we're all pimps and hoes and street pushers and on the corner throwing dice, wearing the big fancy jewelry and stuff. And in actual fact, it was just a style and a way to express it. But that's no different to the Billie Holidays expressing themselves. In the jazz clubs, it's no different to your Miles Davis expressing himself. So, but even though people see the art form and see the music, they forget that there was a life behind those individuals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that life isn't always glitz and glamour, but it's part of how that music was born. So no, I don't think the stereotypes are always negative. The stereotypes is just a reflection on life.
At that time, isn't it?
Yeah, and you saw all of that in blaxploitation films. You saw the love for the game, the love for the street, the love for the pimps, the love for martial arts films, and the love for music all in the same film.
Yeah.
So I don't know if, you know, you guys got a sense of that when you're seeing all these different art forms mingling together, but it was definitely very apparent, like, you know, where the sources of inspiration came from for me. And to sit back and see all of this as a kid that wasn't even there when it actually happened, I'm seeing this secondhand through the generation that came before me. So my uncles and peers around me and taking pieces from them, you know, learning from the great masters, so to speak. You know, when I was in a beat battle, really funny story, actually, I was in a beat battle in London and I was up against this guy called Wizard, right? And Wizard was always known for, like, he was very early on this trap kind of more like bounce wave style of beat. And he was very, like, I wouldn't say flamboyant, but his music came across flamboyant. Like, he went with that big sound of now. And I was just feeling like, oh, wow, I feel like the underdog. I feel like I'm the student. And I was standing at the stage and I could see everyone out in the crowd. And I just felt like, shit, like, I'm going to lose. Do you know what I mean? And you know that moment, like Danielson, where Karate Kid, I almost felt like that, where he comes across those bullies who were, not that I was being bullied, but just that metaphorically, I feel like I'm the smaller guy and the less powerful in this situation. And I actually stood back and I thought, I know he's going to come with this tune. And I decided to play a totally different beat to what anyone would have expected me to play. And the crowd reaction was insane. Like, I did not know that was going to happen. But when I actually think back to that moment, that was straight up martial arts. That was Kung Fu.
No fighting! No fighting!
He was expecting you to, like, put a certain move in, you know, so he's going to, like, he's gonna hit you with something. He's expecting a certain block. And you just came out with some next level, like, unicorn fist or whatever it was that you came out with. That's some wicked, wicked points there. You kind of touch on the blaxploitation thing as well, which obviously, you know, there's elements of there where there's a lot of respect for Kung Fu films in there, which I'd have to say, actually, Jim Kelly, looking back now, how, you know, they didn't, like, make him the, you know, the Roper character.
Yeah, that's crazy, actually. Wonka. I thought he was such a perfect character, man. He just fit that film. It was just a different vibe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know what? Jim Kelly was quite big, you know.
Yeah, he was.
Because he did have some decent big films. I think the biggest film that I remember, maybe there's more to go, more to speak on, but I only remember Black Samurai. And that was a proper blaxploitation film. And I think that was quite big. I'm guessing there's more, but it was a little bit before my time, so I didn't really get to see him in his full flow. So yeah,
Black Samurai. I'm gonna have to watch that.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, Black Samurai. Yeah.
And actually works out quite well. It wasn't even planned this way. We're talking about Jim Kelly, and obviously he was in. He had to go to Hans Island. You can take one VHS or DVD or Betamax if you want, if it's you, Mick. You can take it to this island and you can watch it or you have to watch it until someone comes to rescue you. So what film is that going to be for you?
Liam, you can go. I can't do this. You can go
so
first.
So this is the only, I could only watch this film. Or yeah. I'll be happy watching this film like every day, to be honest. Yeah. But it's...
It seems like you're not sure.
There's two, like I couldn't choose one. I don't know.
He's gonna switch it up.
It's between. Can I say the two or is it just one?
Okay. Go on. You can say both, but you got to choose one though. That's gonna make it even harder.
It's between The Victim and Prodigal Son. Those are my like all time favorite films.
Ooh.
Like,
oh, two of the best, man. Yeah. Two of the best. Okay, so
you know what though? I think it's got to be The Victim. You know,
Master, what's happened?
I give up. Take me to the temple.
It touches on so many things. Like,
yes,
the geezer was the kid was like homeless. He gets picked up by, and then the guy's son, real biological son, hates him. I mean, like the fight scenes in the Victim is ridiculous, especially the last one. The last one always makes me laugh because he gets wrapped around the pillar and it's funny. I have to read. I literally watch it, piss myself laughing, and then rewind it all the way back and watch it, piss myself. I keep like watching that over and over, the last bit. You know what I mean? And sometimes I forget about it and like just start pissing myself. That's another beautiful thing about kung fu films. They're funny as hell, and they don't mean to be.
You bums obviously don't know me. Oh, I know you. You're one of Lou's men, the one they say can kick like a mule.
That is a fantastic choice. And talking about watching the film and then rewinding it, did any of you guys ever have like the time codes for the VHS, like just on memory? So you knew when you put the VHS in, it was like forward 10 minutes, it's this fight, forward 57 minutes.
You guys are deep. You know, I wasn't watching the time code.
You had those days where you just felt like, I'm not here for the fillers today.
Yeah.
I just want to go straight to the action. Yeah,
man.
Who the hell is interrupting my kung fu?
Anyone who's a true kung fu fan is going to have that film, The Victim, in their top 10 list for sure.
Classic.
And again, beauty of the podcast, if you haven't come across The Victim already, you got to get onto that, The Victim. You'll absolutely love it. Okay, so Mike.
Well, Leon.
So that's still yours.
Yeah, you've made me kind of go in a different direction now. Like, I think I was originally gonna go with, I think I was originally gonna go with Buddy's Fist because that film is an absolute classic. Yang Wu-Pin at his best. All the signature kind of like features in his film where they have to stand off between the good and bad student. And they're in their, you know, unique poses. Choreography is beautiful. Like, it's just a classic. But I think I had to switch and go for a more emotional film. So I reckon the film I would choose is Pedicab Driver. The narrative was completely different. Like, it caught me off guard to the point where I was intrigued about how the writers came up with the story. There's some proper tearjerker moments in them, and I felt that, like, you felt properly enraged in that film. Like, it was a big cast as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, huge cast. Yeah. Huge production quality, you know. But it's madly, I mean, Lau Kar-Leung and Sammo Hung, man, in a movie together. Yeah. I mean, what else could you do?
And Lam Chi-Ying was in there too.
I've heard of it. I've heard, like, people mention it, but I haven't actually watched that movie.
It's got to be up there. It's got to be up there as definitely one of Sammo's best films.
I really liked Billy Chow in that film too. He was good.
Billy Chow is like, you know, he's a fully fledged world kickboxing champion. On screen, the way that Sammo like just shows the like pure power.
His fight, Sammo does
take some serious hits in that film.
Yeah, but it does.
Cool. All right, two great films on Hans Island. The next question I've got for you, it's something I do with all the guests. It's called the Fight Box, which is basically like a soapbox for where you to get on and chat about a certain fight scene that you love. I want to know from you, if there was only one fight scene that you had to suggest a... it doesn't have to be like a newcomer, but obviously a lot of listeners are new to martial arts films or are martial arts fans coming back and refinding that sort of love for martial arts cinema. So what fight scene would you suggest that they should watch? Might be something that they go and find back again to just to relive those memories, or it might be something brand new.
There's a few, man.
There's always a few. This is why I make it hard. So, like I said, it doesn't have to be your favorite. So I'm not saying that you gotta say no, this is my favorite of all time. But what, like, I mean, just give me like one scene from a film that you think, you know what, you should go watch this fight scene.
If they've already watched The Victim and they've seen the last fight, then they're good with that. But I'd say The Prodigal Son, the first fight with Lam Ching and Frankie Chan. That fight there. Wow. The way it's shot, like, and like just the cinematography, the choreography, everything, and even the dub, even the, as we touched on, even the dub, like when he gets hit with the rings and it's like, oh, his rings are really hurting me. It's like, it's funny, it's just like, but it's a serious scene.
Those damn finger rings of his are really hurting me.
His kung fu is extremely good.
Boy, what a suggestion, Mike. You know that's a suggestion and a half.
Solid film. Very solid. Oh, man, I don't know what I'd choose. I think originally I was going to go with Moon Warriors with Andy Lau.
Okay.
I love that film. Like, I used to be obsessed with that film, actually, and watch it all the time. But I just like the fight scene with Andy Lau in the woods where they're having the swordplay. I like the fact that it's all based on strings, and I think they use strings really well in all the props and stunts in Moon Warriors. And it was all about fantasy, you know. I love films, a lot of martial arts films, people sometimes dismiss the ones where they are fantasy-based. I think they're great, especially the ones that go in, you know, like Spooky Encounters, where they're a bit more off-key and stuff. But I think Moon Warriors had a good blend between hand-to-hand combat and sword fighting. So I think... scene in the woods at night with Andy Lau. If not that, I would probably have gone for Buddha's Fist. The final fight is an absolute must-see fight scene. It's 8 minutes long. That is choreography, I would say, at its best, in my opinion. I think I don't know why, actually, I didn't say Buddha's Fist, but I just love Moon Warriors, and I think everyone should see that fight scene. But Buddha's Fist, 8 minutes, that fight scene is incredible, where they're calling out all of the names and techniques. One student learns half of a manual, while the other student learns the other half of a manual. And he's way more talented. He's an actual kung fu genius, and you can see him dominating. It's just a joy to watch.
Mm.
Like, one of the best fight scenes ever, in my opinion.
Okay.
And then, mate, I'll take two for the price of one. See, that, like you actually mentioned, Encounters of the Spooky Kind. The last fight in that film, Sammo, is next level.
What was that one?
Encounters of the Spooky Kind. Okay. Yeah.
Brilliant.
That's
film.
Another one from my list to watch.
Oh my god.
I just want to say a massive thank you to you both. Thank you so much for taking the time out to join me on this episode.
No problem, man.
And listen, so the listeners, where can they hit you up on social media? Where's the best way for people to be able to find out a little bit more about yourselves and what you guys are up to?
You know, you'll find me all the usual places where a lot of trouble seems to be happening, like on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Mike Forte, MYKEFORT. I'm mostly there. And if I'm not there, you'll sometimes find me on Instagram, which is exactly the same handle, at Mike Forte, MykeFort. So, yeah, send me a DM, a message, a shout, whatever.
Yes, similar to Mike. I'm not really a Twitter user. Just barely use Instagram, but my at Smith the Mister. So that's my handle for everything. So if you want to find me, just at Smith the Mister. MISTER, not MR. So yeah, you can find me.
Guys, thank you so much for your time.
Stay safe and
keep watching kung fu films, man.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go back and just refresh my memory now, so yeah, definitely.